If somebody says they've got an offer to make you a bunch of money and help the Council of Trent podcast, but they want your PayPal account, don't listen, folks. It's a scam. We got to find out about the scams. So let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday, a fun way to end our week here on the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Catholic apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're talking about scams. You know, I was driving down the 125 freeway here in beautiful El Cajon, California, right between La Mesa and El Cajon, California, on my way into the office, and I saw a phone call. I saw a phone number coming into my phone, and I knew right away that it was a scammer because, well, here's one way that I know. And there's someone who's been arrested for doing this, but it still happens. Sometimes you look on your phone, your cell phone, usually, and you'll see a call and it has like the first three digits of your phone number in it. So it's an incoming call, but it has the first three digits of your cell phone number. So it makes you think, oh, it's like a local call. Maybe it's somebody from my neighborhood or somebody who knows me. It's not some strange person. So I picked it up, and lo and behold, it was the Internal Revenue Service saying that I'm subject to a lawsuit, and so I should press one to pay the fine so that I'm not the victim of a lawsuit. And I will tell you that whenever I see scams, either in the mail or on phones, I am filled with a righteous anger. I am just completely filled with it. I just want to stop these thieves right in their tracks. You know what the lowest part of Dante's Inferno is in hell when he considered who the worst of the sinners were? I mean, the lowest part were the traitors like Judas Iscariot and Cassius and Brutus. But even above them, still in the really low parts, were thieves. Were in the very lower parts of Dante's Inferno, which is actually a very cold place, ironically enough, in his depiction of hell. But yeah, just the idea of people being scammed out of their hard-earned money, oh, it just infuriates me. So I go through and I talk to someone, and they say, oh, the Internal Revenue Service. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. They said, what's your name? I said, oh, it's Seymour. Last name is B-U-T-T-S. And then immediately I get the click and they hang up on me. Then I called them back. Just give them another fake name. And they said, well, you'll need to pay this a lawsuit. And I said, well, why do you have to look at this? You should have my information. You know, you don't need to get this information from me if you're the Internal Revenue Service. I think you're actually a scam. I'm going to report you to the Better Business Bureau, and I'm going to bring the police involved in this. And then they just hang up because they're taught that, you know, it's a numbers game. When you do any kind of telemarketing, is a numbers game when you look at it. They just go through, and if someone is difficult, they just hang up and move on to the next person. And I was being difficult for them, but I hate it because every year, hundreds of thousands of people at least are scammed out of their livelihoods, their income, their savings by predators who are looking to bilk them out of what they've worked hard for. And what really makes me upset is oftentimes it's the elderly, it's people who are, you know, not as savvy to what these kind of scams are happening. And so I fear for my own relatives, my own parents. What if somebody comes after them and I'm not there to say, hey, oh, no, don't give this guy money, or they don't really work for the IRS, or this isn't a real thing. It's a scam. Yet this happens to all kinds of people, actually. We're going to talk about one scam later, the Nigerian 419 scam. That one, I was looking at the statistics here from Australia. It's Scamwatch. That's part of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. They said last month in September 2018, for this particular scam, Australians lost about $30,000 or 55 reports. And the ages of the people who were scammed, though, the majority of them are between ages 25 and 44, which is surprising to me. So this stuff, it can really, really hit anybody. So what I want to do today, then, is talk about all kinds of scams. Three big ones popped into my head that I thought you would be interested in to talk about. But before we get into that, let me offer you an opportunity that is most definitely not a scam. It is an appeal. Once again, I really appreciate all your guys' help in making the podcast possible. We are very, very close now to going to video, actually. We just need a few more patrons. Once we cross the 350 patron level, we'll be able to start broadcasting video. We've recorded a few older podcasts, but we just, you know, we need some more resources and time to get people on board who can do that for us so we can reach YouTube and other places. So if you would be able to help us out to become a premium subscriber at even as low as $5 a month, I think you'll see a lot of great things in the podcast happening. And I appreciate your support. I know you got to be thinking, he didn't really just make an appeal during the episode on scams, did he? Well, here's the big difference. Number one, you see the proof is in the pudding. You see, we're putting out really good content, and I'm proud of that. I want to give people stuff that's going to equip them to explain and defend the Catholic faith. We can't do that without you. Now, for scams, which I'm going to talk about, the big red flag for a scam is you get involved in something and it immediately evaporates and disappears. But I'll tell you, as long as the good Lord will let me be on this earth and breathe the air he puts in my lungs, I will be continuing to do this work to help equip people to evangelize. But let's talk about the scams. Here are the big three I think you should watch out for. Some of the three really famous ones I like to talk about. Number one, the Ponzi scheme. Have you ever heard of a Ponzi scheme? Now, this scheme is named after Charles Ponzi, born Carlo Pietro Giovanni Giuliano Teobaldo Ponzi. I'm not kidding you. That's his full real name. He's Italian. Carlo Pietro Giovanni Giuliano Teobaldo Ponzi. Though I guess in America, it was easier for him to be a scammer by changing his name to Charles Ponzi. So Ponzi is an immigrant here to the U.S., arrives in the United States. After World War I, Ponzi gets a magazine sent to him, and he notices inside of it there's something called an IRC. It's an international reply coupon. It's a way to be able to send postage, like if you want more copies of the magazine, for example. You buy a magazine, you get this little IRC coupon. You can use it to send things without affixing any postage to it. Now, it turns out these international reply coupons, you could exchange them in your own country for different stamps, for postage in your own country. And so what Ponzi was pitching to people, this is back, you know, right after World War I, was that you could take IRC's international reply coupons and you could exchange them in countries like Italy, where you could get a better exchange and then get the stamps, sell them in America. And through this exchange process, you could actually make a small profit. And so he was pitching it to all these people saying, hey, we'll use these IRCs. It's very easy. You're going to get a guaranteed return. This is back when banks were, you know, promising a 5% return on investments, as, you know, or at least saying average return might be 5%. And Ponzi was saying in 45 days, you'll get a 50% return. In 90 days, 100%. You're going to double your money in 3 months if you go with me. And so a lot of people signed on board with that. And did Ponzi have a real investment thing to make this happen? No, he absolutely did not. One, he didn't anticipate how difficult it would be, the logistics involved, how difficult it would be to take these IRC coupons, sell them at the right rate to get the small profit you could and expand that. It's been calculated that in 1920, he had about 18 original investors sign on. Each one gave him $100, it's $1,800. In order for them to get profits, it would have taken the exchange of 53,000 of these IRC coupons. He simply didn't have a distribution network to do that. So what did he do? Well, he still got them their profits. You know, 90 days later, they got their profits in. But how did he do that? Well, that's where the Ponzi scheme comes in. He just took later investors down the line. People who jumped on later gave him their $100, hoping to be remunerated with good profit. He just took the later investors' money and he gave it to the earlier investors. So essentially, this is, if you've ever heard of that expression, robbing Peter to pay Paul, that's what's happening here in a Ponzi scheme. And that phrase itself, it's actually not from the Bible. There's never a place where somebody robbed Peter to pay St. Paul. That's not from Scripture. No one's really sure where it comes from, but it does have roots in the Middle Ages. It may have been the case that a church abbey located at a St. Peter's church abbey in England was assumed in the Diocese of London, and it had to be torn down or renovated. Parts of this St. Peter's abbey had to be sold off to pay for St. Paul's Cathedral. So that might be where the expression comes from. But you can see here, this is just simply not sustainable, because the idea here is, well, I can pay the earlier investors with the later ones. And the later ones, if someone else jumps on board, I'll pay them with their money. And you're just shuffling money around. You're not actually making money. And so it's not sustainable. And at some point, the Ponzi scheme is exposed and the guy who's running it tries to run off with however much money that he can. And so when you hear this, when you see someone is making, you know, an investment opportunity, definitely be, you know, be watchful. Number one, be watchful for people who promise guaranteed returns. When you, I mean, when you're involved in investment, I mean, there's things that are usually safe returns. I mean, you can pick investments that are pretty standard. They might have a low annual return, something only like 3 or 4%. You can invest in a bond and it's almost guaranteed to give you, you know, a little tiny return. But with the large return, if someone's promising above average returns that are guaranteed, it's almost certainly a scam. And you should also check if they're registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, with the SEC. And also be wary if someone comes to you with an investment opportunity rather than you finding it out and going and doing your own homework. That reminds me, there's a great film back in the year 2000 I highly recommend watching. It's called Boiler Room. It's a great movie, actually. The only person, it's funny, a lot of the actors, I don't recognize them except for Vin Diesel, isn't it? One of his early films. And Ben Affleck has a really great scene where he's part of, it's essentially about a brokerage firm that is running the equivalent of like a Ponzi scheme or a similar scheme with their clients, selling stocks that are bogus, companies that don't really exist. Great movie. I highly recommend it. Boiler Room from the year 2000. Because they talk about that. And in the movie, Ben Affleck plays an unscrupulous manager of this brokerage firm. And he fires people who have he's interviewing people to take part in this, promising them that they'll be millionaires by the time they're 30. But if they've passed their Series 7 exams, they can't be a part of the company, because then, you know, they're going to, if they're that far along, they're going to know how unethical and criminal the activity is that they're engaged in. So they want to get people that are pretty naive. So that's the Ponzi scheme, named after Charles Ponzi. To summarize, people jump in on the investment. The earlier investors are not paid with genuine profit. They're only paid with later investors. The Ponzi scheme collapses, though, when you can't get enough investors coming in. And then the operator, he vanishes with whatever money he can. And that had happened earlier, most famous, though, with Charles Ponzi, right after World War I. Number two, the pyramid scheme. Now, a lot of people confuse the Ponzi scheme with the pyramid scheme, but they're separate. So the Ponzi scheme is kind of like a hub and a wheel. So you imagine there's a guy in the center and he's moving all the money around to different, he's the hub, the spoke of the wheel. He gets money from some people. He transfers it to other people to make it seem like the investments are working. So he's like the spoke and the investors are the outer parts of the wheel and he's running everything. That's the Ponzi scheme. The pyramid scheme is structured exactly how it sounds. So the way it works is you have a guy on top, promises an investment opportunity to people who come on board. He gets 10 people under him and says, hey, if you give me $200, you can get part of, you can be a part of this and you'll learn how to make $2,000 a month from home easy. Just pay me for this fee and I'll show you how to do it. But part of what he tells these 10 people is, look, in order to make the money though, you've got to take this DVD, this educational materials, find 10 people of your own and then sell them this, and you have to have a licensing fee. So they pay you a little bit for what you've done. It goes back to you and then you have to pay me for your annual royalty to be involved. So the pyramid begins, you have one guy on top, he recruits 10 people with this, how to make money. But the only way those 10 people can make money is if they recruit 10 people of their own. And then those people down the line are what's called the downstream in pyramid schemes. You know, it's always about building up your downstream is what they'll say. The more people you get under you, you're always making money from them paying you royalties and market or license fees, whatever, you know, you call it, for them to be a part of this great investment opportunity. And so, of course, the pyramid scheme will collapse. It's unsustainable because even if everyone in the world joins in, you still need an unending downstream. The base of the pyramid will not have enough people to support it, and then it will eventually collapse because you can't end up getting money into this anymore. So that's the essence of the pyramid scheme. However, I have to distinguish this from multi-level marketing. But I will say there is a fine line between the two. It can be very difficult to distinguish between them. So multi-level marketing kind of works in the same way. It's where you start, you join a business, and they tell you, hey, it's Amway or whatever it might be, or Herbalife. We'll talk about Herbalife in a second. We've got a great product. Pampered Chef does this too, and lots of other things. We got a great product, and you pay us the fee to be a part of this, and you get to sell our product. Or what happens is you have to buy the product from the company. You put in your own money to buy it, and you probably pay some kind of fee involved for doing this as well. And then you sell the product, and you can sell the product as, or you can sell it and recruit other people, and then you become kind of a distributor, and you sell that product to them, and you make a profit on getting more people involved into the system. This is what the Federal Trade Commission says about multi-level marketing frameworks and pyramid schemes. It says, not all multi-level marketing plans are legitimate. If the money you make is based on your sales to the public, it may be a legitimate multi-level marketing plan. If the money you make is based on the number of people you recruit and your sales to them, it's probably not. It could be a pyramid scheme. So that's what the Federal Trade Commission says about this. And that's one thing to watch out for, that I have nothing against legitimate multi-level marketing. If you think you're really good at being a salesperson, you know Monroe's motivated sequence backwards and forwards, which, in case you don't know, it's get their attention, tell them the problem, give them the solution, have them visualize the solution in their life, and make a call to action. I used to sell women's shoes for several years, so I learned the basis of selling, at least there. If you feel like you're really good at sales and you can manage other people under you who can be good at it, you can make a decent amount of money on multi-level marketing. It's very, very difficult, though. You have to put a lot of work into it. So there's a fine line. So in a pyramid scheme, it's completely bunk if you're only making money by recruiting people and you sell a product, a service, or whatever it may be to those people, because then that's just the pyramid straight up there. Where it gets a little dicey, I feel like, when you're looking at pyramid schemes versus multi-level marketing, are on overvalued products. Something where it seems like, yeah, you're selling a product, but it seems kind of overvalued. Like, you really can't make money on this. You're going to put your money into selling this thing with promises you'll see really good returns, but you're probably just going to be to fold because you can't sell this overpriced thing you're promising to people. And then you're left holding the bag because you can't return unused products to the distributor or the supplier. You're stuck holding the bag. You assume all the risk and they don't. And that's where a company named Herbalife kind of comes in. Now, I don't know the most recent developments that are involved, but Herbalife was one of these it's still in existence, one of these multi-level marketing campaigns where you sell shakes and beauty products, whatever, different kinds of products. I think shakes is the big thing they were selling a while back. And you recruit other people to do this under you. And there's people who've put in, their life savings, $10,000, $15,000 to start essentially an Herbalife franchise under someone else. And they end up unable to sell the materials that are involved and they lose all their money in the process. Whereas their fees they pay to be a part of this go back up the pyramid so it can fund these people who go to these. I mean, it's a huge company. They have these giant, not assembly, I guess, but it's like conventions where people get together and there's cheering and, there's celebrity endorsements and people on videos. They're in Cabo San Lucas and on cruise ships and their helicopters saying, I got rich with Herbalife and you can too. Look, if someone got rich on something, everybody can't get rich that same way because otherwise everybody else would be rich. So it's a combination of luck, talent, and perseverance for people to really get rich. It's not impossible, but it is a lot of hard work in order to get there. It's not something you can just do. Make money from home, $2,000 a week. Why wouldn't you trust me? I put a cardboard sign on a telephone pole. I'm certainly legitimate. That's the essence of scams. If you just remember this, you usually won't be scammed. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So something to remember when people offer you a way to make money. So Herbalife is involved in this multi-level marketing, and I've seen it and have my own thoughts on that, of course. Now, there was a documentary a few years ago, I think it was back in 2016, it came out, called Betting on Zero. And it was about a hedge fund manager, Bill Ackman. He was the president of Pershing Square Capital, big hedge fund organization. And he thought what Herbalife was doing was immoral, unethical. He thought they were taking advantage of people, selling them on an idea that really wasn't sustainable, bilking them out of their hard-earned money. And he thought it was just not sustainable with Herbalife, that it was going to collapse. He thought this is not genuine multi-level marketing. This is a pyramid scheme, and pyramid schemes always fail because you can't get enough people on the downstream to support the base. So what he did was he shorted Herbalife stock. He wanted to prove they were a scheme, and he wanted to make $1 billion in the process. So he shorted them at zero, and he said, you know, they're going to lose money. Their stock is going to plummet because this is a scam. It is a pyramid scheme. It can't possibly work. Now, shorting is kind of a difficult term in stocks and trading for people to understand. Most people at a basic level, you understand buying and selling stocks. You know, you buy a stock when it's low, you know, $10 a share. And then if it goes up to $100 a share, you sell your shares that you bought for $10. If you sell them for $100, bang, you just made $90 in profit, minus what you have to give to your broker and, you know, things like that who you're involved with in order to trade. But that's a traditional way people understand making money on the stock market or foreign currency trading. Shorting is a little bit different. So in the traditional way of buying and selling stocks, you buy low and you sell high. This would be the reverse, actually. You sell high and you buy low. But how is that possible? Well, here's Ackman in the documentary Betting on Zero explaining how shorting works.
Imagine for a moment that a friend of yours collects rare coins, and you have the view that those coins are going to go down in value. So the way you would short those coins is you call up your friend and say, can I borrow a few of your coins? And he says, sure. And you borrow the coins. You then sell them for the $1,000 each that they sell for in the market at the time. And then you wait for them to drop in value. And you turned out to be right, and the coins dropped in value to $500. You go back into the market, you buy them back for $500. You've sold them for $1,000. You've repurchased them for $500. You've made $500 on each coin. And then you return the coins to your friend. Your friend is in the same place he was when he started, and he has the same coins that he started with. You might have to actually pay him something for borrowing the coins because he loaned them to you. So you might pay him an interest rate. So he's happy because he's made an interest rate. He's made interest lending you the coins. You've made money profiting from the decline in the value of the coins, and that's short selling. That's when it works.
But if you sell it at a high price and it goes higher, and it can go infinitely higher because the stock can go infinitely higher, then you're on the hook for that.
So, and that was another commenter in the movie Betting on Zero explaining how shorts, Bill Ackman is talking about how shorts work, and the other commenter is saying, well, there is a downside, of course. Whenever you invest, you have risk that's involved in investment. So traditionally, you know, if you buy low and sell high, you always have the risk that the stock will go down. You know, you buy it at $50 a share thinking that it's going to go up to $100 a share and you're going to get rich when you sell it at $100. Well, you have a problem. If you buy it at 50, if it plummets down to $30 or $20 a share, you sell them, you've lost $30 a share. Something similar happens in shorting. You buy a stock, let's say, you know, you have the Mango Smoothie Parlor Incorporated. Love my mango smoothies. I buy, you know, so I could buy the traditional view, buy 50 shares at $100. You know, I've spent, you know, $5,000. I own $5,000 worth of stock in the company. If the shares go up to $150 per, guess what? I just made, you know, I made 50% increase in my profits in doing that. I made $2,500. If the stock goes up, if it goes down and I sell it, I end up losing money. So how would you short it? Well, in the example that Ackman was talking about, the rare coins are basically the stocks themselves. So what you're doing is when you short sell is let's take stocks for an example. You borrow the stock from another guy's portfolio, or you borrow it from someone else. You borrow a stock you don't own, and then you plan to buy it later at a lower price. So let's go back to Mango Smoothie Parlor Incorporated. And I think that I know there's a problem with the mango crops. And so the shares, the value of Mango Smoothie Parlor Incorporated is going to go down because there's a problem with the mango supplies. There's a blight or something like that. So I buy 50 shares, or sorry, so I go short 50 shares at $100. So what that means is I've essentially borrowed 50 shares in Mango Smoothie Parlor Incorporated. And now my stock portfolio, now my brokerage account, if it's at $100 a share, there's $5,000 in my brokerage account. But I can't just take that $5,000 and walk away because it's not mine. I only borrowed the shares. I don't really own them. So I have to buy them later if I'm going to walk away with that money. So if I buy them, you know, 10 seconds later while they're still at $100 a share, well, then I even out. I've spent all my $5,000 in the brokerage account. I'm at zero. But here's the thing. So let's say I do that 50 shares at $100 and I short it. So I've got $5,000 in my brokerage account. I borrowed these 50 shares. But let's say the mango blight hits and now the shares are only worth about $50 each. So here's the thing. I've got to buy the, I want to walk away with the, $5,000 in my brokerage account. I want to walk away now. I have to really buy those shares for real now in order to put them back into the portfolio I borrowed them from. So I buy the 50 shares. But hey, guess what? It's only $50 per share now. So now I've made a profit. I made $2,500 right off of this because I bought them at a lower price to pay for what I borrowed them at something higher. And so I get to keep the original money. So that's how shorting works. So the downside, of course, is that if the price goes up, then you're stuck. And then you have to pay that difference. And it could be very, very high unless you put a stop involved. So Ackman decided to short Herbalife thinking it was an unethical pyramid scheme. And actually, in 2016, the Federal Trade Commission went in, investigated them. This is in the epilogue of Betting on Zero. And investigated them. Herbalife had to make a $200 million settlement. It had to reform what it was doing, had to change some of their business practices after these investigations. But they still held strong. So in 2018, so just like a few months ago, at the beginning of this year, Ackman ended his short. He realized it was done for. I think he ended up losing like $1 billion on this. And a lot of that happened because a rival hedge fund manager, Carl Icahn, basically wanted to pick a fight with Ackman, and just he bought about a quarter of the shares in Herbalife to prop it up. And I think he ended up making $1 billion. And he did that just to kind of spite the guy, to spite Ackman over this, even though he said he claimed he believed in the product. So it's funny, if you watch Betting on Zero now, it is sad because you know Ackman, he did this not just to make money. He wanted to make money, but he also wanted to show he thought Herbalife was a giant scam, was a real pyramid scheme. And there's taking these people in poor minority communities, getting them to invest in this, thinking they're going to get rich. But then it doesn't pan out for them, and they sometimes lose their life savings. And he wanted to go after Herbalife, pointing this out, and he gave a famous 3-hour presentation about it. But it didn't happen because, you know what? You thought, well, this pyramid scheme is not sustainable. You know, don't underestimate the power of people who would jump on a rich, get-rich-quick scheme. That's what's hard. A lot of these scams, how can they still be functional and operational? It says P.T. Barnum once allegedly said, there's a sucker born every minute. So, you know, there's always somebody who tries to get rich quick without working hard. And those are the people who are fodder for scams. All right, so we talked about Ponzi scheme, pyramid scheme. Last one is the advanced fee scam. So the advanced fee scam, that's one you've probably gotten in your email box. It probably sounded something like this. Hello, I am a deposed prince of Nigeria. Our country is involved in a bitter civil war, and I have a lot of money locked up in the Nigerian Royal National Bank. But unfortunately, because of my current predicament, I cannot access it. But because you are in America, you can. If you can just send me a small fee, we can wire the money into your account, and you stand to receive $32 million American dollars. Well, who could say no to that? And that is essentially, so the advanced fee scam, I mean, that's the Nigerian advanced fee scam. It's also called the 419 scam, named after section 419 of the Nigerian criminal code, where this is involved. And what's amazing is there are people, young and old, intelligent businessmen, people who fall for this. You know, when there are people who reply to this, you know, they'll send credit card information, PayPal, bank routing numbers. They'll spend thousands of dollars to try to get this money. And some of these people, the scammer on the other end, gets them to fly to Nigeria to collect the money in person and then kidnap them and hold them for ransom. It happens more often than you think. But usually, though, the advanced fee scam is always the same. You've got someone who's got an amazing business opportunity. I just need you to put a little bit of money down first, and then, you know, then it's going to be coming right your way. You put the money down, and then you never hear from the person again. I remember when I've tried to sell a few things on Craigslist, actually. Oh, I had this old camera. I had the Canon XL2. I bought that, oh my gosh, it was like a $5,000 camera when I got it in the early 2000s. And I tried to sell it like 2 years ago and it was worth nothing. This old mini DV technology. I tried to sell it for like $250 on Craigslist. And all I got were people saying, would love to buy your camera. Can't do cash. Having car problems, can't come get it. Could we just do this on PayPal? Can you send me PayPal account number? Nope. Scam. Not going to do that. So, and that's the same thing with, you know, with 419, they'll try to do is to get you to put this money forward to try to receive this $32 million inheritance and other things like that. But it's important to watch that out for that when it comes to advanced fee scams, that if you have to do a fee first for something, check to make sure it's a legitimate business. So here's something important. If someone sends it to you, if you're doing an email, whether it's some kind of business transaction, they say, yeah, send the money to me. We'll make this happen. I'm working with so-and-so company. Check to make sure they really work there. I was a maniac about this when I was selling my house in Phoenix before I moved to San Diego. I mean, you're dealing with tens of thousands of dollars. You know, they're being transferred between accounts, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a lot of money. And if it's transferred to the wrong account, you will never see it again. It's gone. And so I remember they said, oh, this is the escrow company you need to wire the money to. And so, you know, I get the email saying I'm so-and-so with the escrow company, send me this money. And I say, wait a minute. So I go online, I check three different things. Don't just, you know, you get an email, you think, oh, well, I'll check to make sure they really work here. So I'll call the number. Don't call the number for the company in the email, because that could lead to a scam. It could be just someone spoofing a phone number or running a fake phone number for whatever's in the email. Go and check with the Better Business Bureau or check online through an online public database. Say, oh, here's the company. Here's what it's the number registered with the Better Business Bureau. I'm going to call this number, and this is the real person who is talking to me that I'm supposed to be dealing with, not some kind of a scammer. So I hope that was helpful for you all. And now you know the difference between where the 419 scam comes from. And now I think you'll be able to tell people the difference between a Ponzi scheme and a pyramid scheme. Something that's interesting, definitely want to equip you. But if you get any grief from any of these people, send me an email. I'll be happy to call them on your behalf, because I want to, you know, maybe one day if I'm called away from Catholic apologetics, it'll be to be the Batman of stopping telemarketing scammers. Or, you know, I'll be the Liam Neeson coming after them. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. I don't have money. But what I do have are a set of skills that make me incredibly dangerous for people like you. I will look for you. I will find you. And I will report you to the Better Business Bureau. So thanks for joining us on Free For All Friday. Hope to catch you all next week on the Council of Trent podcast. Definitely please support us at TrenthornPodcast.com. Help us cross that threshold so we can get video, get on YouTube, do a lot more content for you guys, and share you the bonus content once again at TrenthornPodcast.com. Thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.